If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
Not too embarrassed to say our names, Adam Pranica here on the Wheels of Steel.
Yeah, I've really been going down a hole with this. I mean, like, I've always been kind of a ambient Star Trek watcher, but like, I looked at my Amazon recently looked at, and there was like a, you know, DVD box set of Deep Space Nine and a Mega Bloks Starship Enterprise E in there. And I was oh my God, I am really turning into a horrible man-child.
Well, you know you have a problem when you're getting into physical media.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it. I was mainly curious to see, like, had the Enterprise ever been licensed in a plastic building block format. And I feel like Mega Bloks is real low rent.
Do you have a collection of Star Trek collectibles?
I don't. I used to have the action figures when I was a child, but I think I sold them to the used toy store at some point. Yeah.
Because you shared something very shameful in the last episode. maybe I'll tease a little story about something related to that idea a little bit later.
Oh my God, I am on tenterhooks. I don't know what a tenterhook is, but I'm on one.
Yeah, that it could be really nice.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So, Adam, this is episode 6, titled Lonely Among Us. The Enterprise is en route to a planet called Parliament with delegates from two warring planets. And Parliament, I guess, is kind of the Switzerland of this part of space.
Not to be confused with, like, a planet known for its minty flavor.
Yeah. or its funkadelicness.
Right. Yeah, both of those.
So the two warring races, like, we learn very early how deep their hate is for each other when a bunch of lizard people, these are the Salae, and they beam aboard and say that they can already smell the Antikins, who are the other race that is aboard.
It's basically your standard fish versus dog story.
Yeah.
I mean, so first of all, these are rubber mask aliens. Like, they are not paint on the tip of the nose aliens like you might be used to in the Star Trek universe.
These are a lot more akin to your Planets of the Apes kind of characters, like
down to the unmoving mouths. Yeah. When they talk. Yeah, it's real Country Bear Jamboree style alien process here.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so the Salae are, they sort of look like, they have like cobra heads. They're kind of Kelly Green cobra heads. And then the Antikins are like weird, bald canine. If Dr. Moreau tried to crossbreed a hairless dog with a monkey.
Yeah. Yeah, that's accurate. That checks out.
Oh, you have your Dr. Moreau calculator on your desk there? Yeah, so the Enterprise is basically just kind of operating a ferry service to get these two races of assholes, I will venture to say, from one place to another. And on their way, they encounter a weird cloud of energy, and Picard is curious enough to direct them to take a close pass, and we see Worf and Geordi in the sensor room, which I don't think that we ever see this sensor room again. But it's kind of a cool little set, and while Geordi is distracted by something, Worf gets blasted with lightning, and it's one of the greatest Worf screams in his entire, like, 10 or 11 season history as a character on TNG and DS9.
I felt so strongly about that that performance that it made me feel like, if you're casting for the part of Worf, isn't that all you're casting for? Like
give us your best energy beam through the panel and into your hand.
Yeah, and the casting director, I feel like, spent a good week having people come in and growl and fall down just for hours at a time. And Michael Dorn got the part, I think, on the strength of this performance.
Yeah, fucking kills the growls. So Worf is now passed out and taken to sick bay, where Dr. Crusher starts examining him, and when nobody's looking, she gets infused with this energy, and so it sort of passes out of his body and into hers, and she starts acting like a real weirdo, which kind of made me wonder why Worf wasn't just going around acting like a weirdo. Like, why did it knock him out, but she was able to just kind of absorb it and walk around? She, like, wanders onto the bridge, and, you know, Data is still such a naive character that he can't tell the fact that she's acting super weird means that she's been taken over by an alien intelligence.
Yeah, look, I mean, they only trust Michael Dorn to growl and fall at this point in the series. Like, they're clearly giving Beverly Crusher's character a lot more to do.
Yeah. Worf really hasn't had many lines or scenes at this point.
And
so
he's
far.
Been out of entire episodes, too.
Yeah, that's true. So she kind of transmits the energy into the science console that she's using, and then the ship starts to sort of fall under the influence of this creepy alien intelligence. It drops out of warp, and they call up the assistant chief engineer, Singh, who is almost immediately killed, which I felt like was a real shame, because I think Singh, he seemed like a really charismatic character. And
yeah, and it was cool to see an Indian man as part of the crew. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I felt like that was kind of a missed opportunity to just have this character get introduced and then killed immediately.
Did you know, a bit of trivia, he was the first character killed on the show, the first Enterprise crew character.
Oh, wow.
Number one. So drink if you had a bet on Engineer Singh.
Yeah. So Picard orders, like, a murder investigation and makes a tangential reference to Sherlock Holmes. And then for the rest of the episode, Data is walking around with a crazy pipe, smoking it, and, like, talking in a very arch tone and using deductive Sherlock Holmesian investigative techniques, which is the kind of the first introduction of a leitmotif that runs through the entire series of Data being obsessed with Sherlock Holmes.
A related leitmotif to that is also just Data being incredibly annoying.
I feel like this is the character really, like, showing some range that we don't usually see. Like, he's usually so measured, and Brent Spiner really plays these moments for comedy. Like, it's so silly. Like,
there's some real capital A acting going on with Brent Spiner.
Yeah. Anyways, so this episode gets really up on its high horse about a couple of things. early on, Picard kind of talks about how part of their dispute is over an economic system, and he really is dismissive of that being a legitimate reason to have a dispute. And then the whole crew is really horrified that the Antikens eat actual animals for meat. They're really offended by that because they're all used to eating replicated food.
I think it says a lot that we're spending so much time on the gas cloud storyline versus the fish versus dog conflict, because the stakes don't really seem that high in this whole diplomatic dispute at any point.
No, yeah, it's like these aliens are ridiculous. Maybe you should just let them hash their stupid differences out and not like sweat their their little problem. So anyways, Troy starts trying to like hypnotize Worf and Dr. Crusher, finding that they can't remember what happened to them when they were under the influence of this being. And eventually the being finds its way into Picard. And then everybody realizes they are in some deep shit, because when Captain Picard is acting like a weird space cadet, nobody can pull rank on him other than the doctor, but she has to be pretty sure why she's pulling rank on him and like medically taking him out of service.
He really big dogs Beverly and Riker when they try to do a little intervention on him.
Yeah, they come in and say like, "Hey, Captain, like we think you should submit to a psych screening."
And his big comeback to that is like, "Well, I think you should submit to a psych screening."
Yeah.
Which they have no comeback for. They're like, "Okay." And they kind of back out of the room and then go take the psych screening.
Yeah, they go take them. It's a fucking order, man. Orders is orders. He orders the ship to turn around and head back toward this energy cloud, and then starts kind of explaining that he has merged his intelligence, or this alien has merged its intelligence with his, and has convinced Captain Picard to explore the galaxy with him as a being of pure energy, and that this is what Picard wants. And so they can't talk him out of it, and Picard goes down to the transporter room and beams himself off the ship and doesn't rematerialize on the other side as matter, just rematerializes as energy. And so they're like, "Holy shit, the captain just fucking wasted himself." And then Troy senses the captain's conscience out in the cloud.
"Wait, it's the captain."
I think Picard saw the advantage of putting his information in the cloud.
This show has been very influential to the designers of technology gadgets. You know, your flip phone is based on the communicators from the original series. Pretty unimpeachable backup.
Yeah.
You know?
And it turns out the crew could recover that information when they wanted it.
Yeah. So they push the Enterprise into the cloud, and Data figures out a way to like rematerialize the captain, and all is well. And the captain doesn't even remember anything that happened before the entity entered his body. So they continue on their way, now super late, to get to the peace conference. The end.
My love is a peace, but long in jail for that.
Did you think that the end of this episode was really weird? Like, in a weird Dukes of Hazzard style ending? Like, they beam Picard back to the ship. He's like, "What the hell happened? I don't remember anything." And yeah. Riker and Tasha are like, "Well, some crazy stuff went down, and we've got this whole, like, fish versus dog thing going on board." And Picard's like, Number one, why don't you go ahead and take over? I'm going to go grab a nap.
Yeah, he totally leaves Riker holding the bag. It's such a dick move.
And then Riker and Yar sort of look at each other, and I was full on expecting, like, freeze frame roll credits on that shruggy smile look that they give each other. But that's it. Like, that's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
It was like the end of Chips. You remember the end of a Chips episode?
Yeah.
When they'll be like riding their motorcycles off in the distance, and like right. one of them will look at the other guy, freeze frame credit, and then they'll go back to credits. Real time, and then the other guy will look at the other guy, freeze frame roll credit. It was real awkward.
Yeah, we're definitely coming out of an era of television where they felt like ending a show was just way too much to even contemplate.
All that was missing was like the Matlock end theme song.
Yeah. I would say that the biggest thing that really stuck out to me is, like, the doctor comes back from her fugue state on the bridge, and she doesn't remember how she got there, and everybody's going, like, doctor, are you all right? And she's like, I just don't remember what I was even doing in here. And I would think that a Federation doctor on a Starfleet ship would raise more of an alarm. Like, she's a commander. She should be like...
Right.
Either I have just gone into a fugue state or had a stroke or something. This is something that happens like over and over in Star Trek, where a character will not just say something to the person next to them that would cause everybody to kind of change what they're doing.
Another thing like about her and how she acted that I thought was weird was like, we have a bunch of examples of this. So Riker, in the very first episode, is able to watch an entire episode of Star Trek to catch himself up on what's happened.
Yes.
So we're pretty clear that there is a log or a record or a flight data recorder on the Enterprise.
Right.
You can see what people have done. But Worf gets shocked by the thing in the sensor booth. He can't remember what happened, and everyone just sort of takes it as face value, like... Huh,
yeah.
He can't remember. The doctor can't remember what she was doing on the bridge, that engineering station. A couple episodes ago, the Traveler is like entering in these complicated computer settings to take the ship faster than it's ever been. No one knows how he does it, but like, why doesn't the ship have a recorder of every button that's ever been pushed? It seems like the easiest thing.
Harder to write that series, I guess, if it was internally consistent. Well, I would say that like this is definitely another one of those episodes that would have flown in the original series, but would not have flown past season 2 of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah.
Like, I think that there was a lot more well-established internal logic by season 2, and a lot of these early episodes just kind of don't really consistently interact with that logic.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
The last thing I had on my list was talking about Troi, because I feel like she really comes into her own in this episode. She has some real scenes where she's like actually doing some stuff. She's interacting telepathically with Picard's energy pattern when it goes out into the cloud, and it's not just... She's not just there to kind of announce what emotions need to be experienced by the audience this time. I don't know. She's a character that I really like, and I feel like this is the first real stab at character development that she's had.
She had a scene that wasn't so great, though, when Picard hits the lights on the bridge and starts shocking everyone.
Yeah, this is a pretty exciting scene. Like, Picard, like, grabs the two consoles at the front of the bridge and... lightning bolts go into everybody's chest, and they like can't move, and Data's like trying to get an arm out to like grab onto Picard, and he can't do it.
You remember what Troi says, though?
This is blinding me.
And like, my eyes went directly to Geordi in that moment, like looking for an eye roll that I knew I wasn't going to see.
Yeah, he can't see through that visor that well.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
For this episode, Adam?
Yeah, I think I do. My drunk Shimoda is Tashi Yar, the purported security chief of the entire ship. for some reason, the captain's acting weird, and the chief of security doesn't have the agency to, you know, relieve him of duty or take him down with a phaser as soon as he starts electrically shocking the two helm consoles. Like,
yeah.
She seemed pretty useless in this episode as a character. Oh, and also, like, let's not forget the Antikins and the Soleil. They're just having their run of the entire ship, and as chief of security, she seems completely powerless to lock a door from the outside.
Yeah, they keep catching the Antikins and the Soleil attempting a murder caper on each other.
Yeah, and, real bad job, Tasha Yar.
Yeah, I mean, they confiscate these weapons, and it's like... It's like, that's not going to cut it. Like, confiscating the weapons is step one. Like, there's a bunch of other things you could do.
You could also lock a door.
Yeah, I guess we haven't really established whether or not any doors can be locked on this, this stupid ship.
Yeah.
Because the only other time when one would have needed to, it's when Tasha's boosting scarves from Deanna Troi's quarters.
I mean, you can tell the crew's getting frustrated with the ship, too. Like, this is not the first episode where they're sort of bitching about it. Like, the ship's supposed to be brand new. Why are we having these power fluctuations?
Yeah, like, less than a year out of space dock.
I think the lack of door locks is presenting a real issue.
Yeah, maybe they go in for a refit at some point in between season one and season two. Yeah,
we can only hope.
My Drunk Shimoda are the delegates. You know, we've talked quite a bit about it, what bickering babies they are.
They're trying to join Starfleet, right? Is that their deal, or are they already in?
I think that they say at some point, like, they're trying to broker this peace so that the Ferengi don't broker the peace instead, which is just another, like, kind of egregious attempt to set the Ferengis up as this major adversary that they never wind up feeling like.
That's a fun group of rubber head people.
You would think that spacefaring species would have any amount of skill as diplomats, and they like literally act like 6-year-olds the entire time, and didn't quite come across as plausible to me.
I lost your signal completely, Ben. I don't know if you can hear me, but I can't hear you anymore. Oop.
Did I lose you?
Still can't hear you. Hello? Hello? Hey, there you are.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know either.
Well, I just finished a thought, so maybe we can just kind of call that the end of that chunk and move on.
Maybe I'll say something like, oh, that's a very interesting thought, Ben. And that'll be a little Easter egg for us.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I am the cutest of all. Lock phasers on that vessel. I am the cutest of all.
How did you feel about this episode, just as a whole, given what we've seen up to and including it?
I would say that it had, I would say, three moments that really made it fun for me to watch. The Worf scream at the beginning, the Data Sherlock bullshit in the middle, and the lightning deck at the end. So, you know, I would say that definitely not a terrific episode, but held my interest more than some of these others have.
Yeah, I would say I liked parts of it, but it felt pretty weak to me. The cool parts, I thought, were like just the idea that someone could beam themselves out into space and not die. They don't really give you any background for how that's possible or why. They just sort of talk around the idea that, you know, there is energy and then there is physical matter, and Picard beamed energy out into the cloud. So,
right.
I mean, we aren't meant to truly understand what that's about, but the idea that we all thought he was dead and then he wasn't was definitely exciting. But I thought everything...
And they definitely, like, play it like, yeah, like, we might not get this guy back. And I felt like that was emotionally effective.
Yeah, this is one of many times Riker thinks he's captain, and he's like, okay, well, I guess we better go back to Parliament.
Yeah.
Most of everything else was not great. I mean, this is pretty clearly a bottle episode. You know what I'm saying? Like we never come back to either of these alien races again.
Yeah.
Like, it just sort of exists on its own, and then we're on to the next.
Although I did read in the Wikipedia that they get used in, like, background if they ever needed, like, a bunch of weird aliens walking around in a background, because it's just, like, a weird rubber helmet, essentially.
If so. You don't need them to talk,
yeah. Like,
they're pretty cool looking.
Right.
That's their greatest use, I think, sticking them in the background, like really George Lucasing them up.
Yeah, these are Cantina aliens for sure.
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had a chance to interrupt.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
It was really quite hypnotic.
All right, so the next episode is Justice. When Wesley is sentenced to death for innocently violating an alien planet's custom, Captain Picard is forced to choose between negotiating for Wesley's life or adhering to the Federation's prime directive, which prohibits interfering with another civilization's way of life.
This was one of the most memorable episodes for me, I think, just going off of
totally
what I recall. I remember Wesley falling into some bushes and getting into some big, big trouble.
Yeah. I remember this being an episode that really explored the idea of side boob in a way that Trek has not traditionally done. And also that there's a lot of man package on display in this episode. Almost wow. To the point where you can't believe that they aired it on network television. I definitely wouldn't veto watching this episode. Doesn't sound like you would either.
No, not at all. I'm pro nudity.
I guess that means folks will have to join us again next week for another exciting installment of The Greatest Generation.
I mean, they don't have to do anything. No. Actually, we'd probably prefer at this point that they don't.
But. Yeah, you know, this is one of the first episodes we're recording since we actually started releasing episodes of this. And I just want to say, like, we're really embarrassed by this show and all of these people that go on iTunes and leave reviews and then, like, write notes about how much they like it on Facebook and Twitter. I understand that you're, like, it's nice of you to do, but it's very embarrassing for us. So please stop. Okay? That's me talking to you, the listener.
It's sort of like a nerd sex tape going viral. You know, yeah. Like we're doing a thing that we feel a great sense of shame about, and people won't stop talking about it. Yeah. So.
Kind of vexing.
Yeah. I don't know what to do about it. I guess we'll just have to keep recording these episodes.
Yeah. And I mean, if somebody wanted to continue that feeling of vexation, they would go to iTunes and leave a 5-star review, which is just clearly mocking us.
They could also go to our website, gawk.biz, which should now be fully functional the way Commander Data is fully functional in a multitude of techniques and positions.
Yeah. This weird silvery yellow didick. I've been Ben Harrison.
I've been Adam Pranica.
Don't call, don't write.